Today is Monday, November 17th, 2014, Mill Valley Public Library History Room. This is Mari Allen interviewing Bob Canepa of 6 Middle Court, Mill Valley. Good afternoon, Bob.
Hi, Mari. Glad to be here.
Yes, welcome. Can you please start our conversation by telling me about where and when you were born and a little bit about your family's history in Mill Valley?
I was born on September 2nd, 1947, at the old Ross Hospital, which was torn down two or three decades ago, I'm guessing. And my father came, let me backtrack, my father actually came to Marin on the old ferry system way back when, in the early 20s, I'm guessing, or mid-20s. And one day, on one of his trips to the country visits, he got lost and somehow ended up in Mill Valley. And he fell in love with it. And at that time, he had a store in San Francisco in the corner of Cole and Carl Street in San Francisco near Kezar Stadium.
And was that a grocery store?
That was a grocery store, and it was kind of in the middle of the Haight-Ashbury area a little bit, mm-hmm. on the edge of the Haight-Ashbury.
And what was your father's name?
Frank Canepa.
Okay.
And then he decided to come open a store in Mill Valley. And so he came over on July 4th, 1929, and just so happens that's when the Great Fire was hitting Mill Valley at the exact same time, not an auspicious start at all. And he got off the train, and they were literally conscripting all able-bodied men off the train, and he had a brand new gray suit on,
mm-hmm.
a fancy new suit to open the new store. And they drafted him into fighting the fire, and he didn't even get a chance to go into the store. They literally trucked him up to the mountain, and he fought the fire all day. I don't know how many days he did that,
mm-hmm.
but his suit was utterly destroyed. And but anyway, he went on to open the store. And
where was the location of the first store?
It was on next to Citibank on Throckmorton Avenue, right where the Hat Box used to be located.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that was in 1929, and also not an auspicious year to start, because that was also the year that started the Great Depression in mm-hmm. October. And at that time, there were a goodly number of little mom-and-pop markets in Mill Valley, and downtown Mill Valley, as well as along Miller Avenue. I'm going to guess at that time there's probably 10 or 12 little markets in the Mill Valley area. And his emphasis was on produce and top quality produce mm-hmm. and top service to his customers.
And when he opened the store, was it called Mill Valley Market?
It was called Mill Valley Market, mm-hmm. right. And he walked the extra mile for his customers. He did everything he possibly could. And especially during the Depression years, they either traded, bartered, or mm-hmm. gave food to Mill Valley residents. When I was younger, when my teen years and college years and later 20s and 30s, a lot of the old Mill Valley residents would come up to me and stop me and say, if it wasn't for your mother and father, we would have starved during the Depression, because they gave away a lot of food and carried a lot of people for a long time, and sometimes never got paid.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a different time, but my father always taught us by giving back to our community. And so that was instilled in me at an early year mm-hmm. age. And anyway, that's how the store got started, and it became part of the fabric of Mill Valley.
Mm-hmm. And was he married to your mother at the time?
I don't know what year they got mm-hmm. married. I think they were married then. I'm not sure. My mother was a surgical nurse at Ben Franklin Hospital in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Not Ben Franklin, but Franklin Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so my father came over to the U.S. in 1912 when he was only 16 years old.
From where?
From Varazze, Italy,
mm-hmm.
which is, I've been there many times. And my mother came over in the early 20s, and she was from Bremen, Germany.
And what was her name?
Kate Canepa, K-A-E-T-H-E, mm-hmm. Canepa.
Mm-hmm.
And they met in San Francisco in the, I'm guessing, somewhere in the mid to late 20s,
mm-hmm.
and got married. And it was kind of an odd combination, because you had the more fun-loving Italian father, but very disciplined in terms of work ethic, and my very disciplined mother from northern Germany,
mm-hmm.
Very strong work ethic,
mm-hmm.
and so I started working at an early age. I think I was around 7.5, 8 years old.
Mm-hmm. And did you have siblings?
I had an older brother, Jim, who was 15 years older than I am, and an older sister, Marilyn, Patsy we called her,
mm-hmm.
and she was 12 years older. And so I was kind of the surprise child.
Mm-hmm.
when I was born, They told my mother there's three things. You either have polio, cancer, or you're pregnant. And she didn't know which was the worst scenario at the time because she was in her early 40s. Mm-hmm. And that was really unusual in those days mm-hmm. to have a child of that age. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because my brother and sister were so much older, I was kind of just left on my own to do whatever I wanted. And mm-hmm. I explored and... I don't think my parents knew where I was most of the time.
And was your home at the time near the store? Where was your home?
We lived on Oakdale Avenue, mm-hmm. 277 Oakdale Avenue, about a 10-15 minute walk from mm-hmm. our home to Mill Valley Market. And late 1954, we moved from the old location on Throckmorton to our present location on Quarter Madera Avenue. And it was a much smaller store then. I remember it was called the Green Frog Market, mm-hmm. and it was only the first four aisles and the little barn in back. The barn was the warehouse. And I remember what was interesting about the market was there's green frogs everywhere, on the walls, the doors, just green, giant green frogs. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you look, there's green frogs. Then over the years, later on in, I want to say the late 60s, we expanded into the next three aisles. And then in the mid-70s, we expanded over to next to the creek. There used to be other property where the deli and wine.
So was that another store at the time?
There was a number of stores. There was a cafe. There was a little pet shop. Mm-hmm. There was a little tiny insurance shop. And then there was the famous Quinn's Bar, mm-hmm. Which is a Mill Valley landmark. And either Jimmy Quinn hated you or he loved you. There was no anywhere in between. And if you had long hair, if you were hippie, he would throw you out with a lot of expletives. I remember being in there when he would throw out the hippies.
Oh, that's funny. So tell me where you went to elementary school.
I went to the old Mount Carmel mm-hmm. on corner of Blythedale.
Which is now the Greenwood School.
Greenwood School, mm-hmm. exactly. And my father was Catholic, so we ended up going there. And I went to in kindergarten, maybe first grade at Park, mm-hmm. then went on to Mount Carmel. And my parents were really big on education. And so I was, I don't know why it was me, but I went to St. Ignatius in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. My brother and...
And how did you get there at the time? Were there buses?
I would take a Greyhound bus from downtown, it was then the bus depot, mm-hmm. which is now
or
a book depot.
Squares.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I would take it from there to Lombard Street, and then catch the the Fillmore bus over to McAllister, and then catch the 5 McAllister from there to the old S.I. St. Ignatius campus mm-hmm. on Stanion Street.
Oh, okay.
Which is now, that campus is now part of USF. Mm-hmm. So it was a good long commute each way. And then a good part of high school, I would work after school on weekends as well. So and it was a very competitive learning environment, to put it mildly, plus working and... So I had kind of an unusual childhood because the only time I really got to play is when we were visiting family in Italy. So I actually have probably more childhood friends in Italy than I do here. And when I go to Italy, we have these big reunions of all my childhood friends.
So do you speak Italian?
I used to speak better. Let's say I put it this way. I used to speak semi-fluently when I was 4 and 8 and 12. Mm-hmm. And less so as I got into college.
So did your father speak to you in Italian?
No, unless he was swearing at me.
Okay. And what about your mother? Did she speak to you in German?
No.
Do you speak any German at all?
Zero.
Oh.
And I never went to visit the family in Germany. I don't know why it evolved that way. And the only time my mother really relaxed was when she was in Italy. When we were home, mm-hmm. it was always work, work, work. So I wasn't working at the store. We were washing windows or... polishing shoes or cleaning, whatever it was, you didn't have much idle time.
And when did you start working at the cash registers? Were you young?
Cash registers probably late teens, I'm mm-hmm. guessing. I don't even remember. Because my first experience in Mill Valley Market was sweeping the floor, and the broom was way taller than I was. And I remember my father yelling at me I wasn't doing it right. And cleaning toilets. I mean, mm-hmm. I did every crummy job there was to do.
And were your brother and sister working there as well?
My brother was a lot older, so mm-hmm. he was already in the business at that point. Mm-hmm. And my sister never worked in the business. She lucked out somehow. She was very lucky. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I delivered groceries in high school and college when we had a delivery truck, and I would work stock, and then later on did other duties when I got older and wiser, you know, more equipped. And
so after SI, where did you go?
Then I went to University of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So I graduated from SI in 1965. Mm-hmm. And being a good Jesuit high school, I went to a good Jesuit college, and which actually served me well later when I went in the Marine Corps, because the Jesuits are, my opinion, the religious equivalent of the Marine Corps. Very hardcore, mm-hmm. very disciplined, but it served me well.
Mm-hmm. What was your major there?
I was history and political science minor, mm-hmm. and I'm still a huge history buff and mm-hmm. political science buff.
And did you live on the campus, or did you live at home still?
I lived on campus mm-hmm. in one of the dorms, and my junior year I spent in Rome, Italy, so I went over right at the tail end of sophomore year mm-hmm. and came back right before the start of my senior year. Mm-hmm. So I was there for about 14 months. Mm-hmm. And then I graduated from USF in 69. But the highlight for me was the year in Europe. I traveled everywhere and got in so much trouble. And my kids did what I did, I would kill them. I mean, mm-hmm. I was almost shot in Algeria, and we were pistol whipped and robbed. And
now you're saying we. Who were you traveling
with? Oh, I was traveling with a friend of mine across North mm-hmm. Africa by car. Mm-hmm. And was beaten up in a riot in Rome. And I was in Czechoslovakia in Prague right before the Russian tanks came in that summer of 68.
And did your parents know about any of these escapades at all?
No. Mm-hmm. In fact, when my father was in Europe when I started my junior year mm-hmm. in Rome, and he came down to Rome with me, and he gave me a wad of cash, and he said, "This is for books." And I don't know why he said this, but he said, don't use this money to buy a motorcycle. And I never once, ever mentioned to him anything about a motorcycle. So literally, the next day, my roommate and I, we go down and buy a motorcycle. We each pay half. And the funny part was, I never told my parents about the motorcycle, mm-hmm. but at the end of my stay in Europe, mm-hmm. My last few weeks, I was visiting my family in last week was in visiting my family in Varazze, Italy, mm-hmm. and I gave the motorcycle to my uncle, and he loved it, and he was mm-hmm. so grateful, and blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until my father's next visit, he says to my father, he said, "Look at the beautiful motorcycle that Bob gave me. Isn't that wonderful?" And, of course, I was older, and it wasn't much my father could do at mm-hmm. that point. But so they never knew about most of the stuff that I did. In fact, they knew very little what I did, mm-hmm. only the good stuff.
Oh, of course, of course. What you sent back in postcards and letters,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
So after UCSF, what happened? Where did you go?
Not UCSF, USF.
Oh, USF. Oh, pardon me, I'm sorry, USF.
Well, so I graduated, I guess it was May of 69, and Vietnam War was still hot and heavy, and I'm trying to stay out of the draft, mm-hmm. and I go to the draft board and said, "I want to go to law school." I didn't really want to, but that mm-hmm. was thinking three years to keep me out of law school, mm-hmm. and they said, "No, we'll give you 1 year." Okay, fine, so I applied to Dominican University and got a 1 year. I went for 1 year and got a secondary teaching credential, mm-hmm. just to keep me out of the draft. And then I go back to
in history.
In secondary teaching credential, but okay. I was specializing in history. Okay. Yeah, and I did student teaching at Centerville High School for mm-hmm. a senior class and a freshman class mm-hmm. while I was there. And then, so when I got my teacher credential, I go back to the draft board. And they said, "We're going to draft you now."
Mm. And what year was that?
This was probably June of 1970. Mm-hmm. So instead of getting drafted, I volunteered for the Marine Corps. I said, "Well, if I got to go, I want to go mm-hmm. with the best," which I thought was the best. I'm a little prejudiced. Mm-hmm. So, but I went on a delayed enlistment program. I don't know how it worked out that way. But I officially entered the Marine Corps. I flew back to the old Reagan National mm-hmm. Airport. I'm trying to think what was it called, it, and flew into National. And on Valentine's Day, 1971, I thought it was a rather ironic date. Mm. It's Marine Corps humor at its best, picking Valentine's Day, and went into the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. And that was really my best education ever.
Why do you say that?
in terms of growing up and maturing and learning leadership. And a good example would be I showed up with California's, what I call California sideburns, down to here, and this big bushy mustache. And fairly long hair, which was not incumbent. Mm-hmm. But there was only another moron in myself who showed up with a big mustache and sideburns. And the our drill instructor marched us into the bathroom and had us get our shaving gear. And he sat there with a stopwatch. And he said, "You have 30 seconds to shave your mustache and sideburns." And both of us were bleeding like stuffed pigs because in 30 seconds you can't do that. And so it was, but it was a good learning curve for me, and it was a lot of fun. I went through officer candidate school, and I found out literally the last week because as I was about ready to graduate and become a young second lieutenant, that whenever we went on hikes, because we did a lot of marching, a lot of hiking, we come back, my feet were always bleeding. I always, and the Navy corpsman said, "You know, you have flat feet. You shouldn't even be here." He's going, "Okay, well, that's a little late, you know." I said, he said, "You can get out." I said, "No, I don't want to get out now. I have no intention." But it was interesting that I find out literally a few days before becoming a Marine Corps officer. So then after that, I went through 6 months with what they call the basic school. So I'm a young second lieutenant, and they teach you a little bit of everything, a lot of infantry tactics and maneuvers and compass readings and maps, but a lot of leadership. And it was ironic because years later I was watching the Iran-Contra hearings, and I looked at one of the people on the TV screen, and it was Ollie North, who was one of the principal figures in the Iran-Contra. He was one of my instructors at Quantico. I looked at him, I said, "I know him," but I couldn't figure out where it was from. But that was a good learning experience. And then I had at the end of that 6 months, I was scheduled to start artillery school. And so I worked for, on base there, they had me doing, I think, a month and a half or something like that. I was doing demolitions. They taught me how to blow things up. And it was fun. It was really fun. And I worked for a young Italian-American captain named Captain Fazzullo, and he taught me how to basically steal from the other branches of the military. And so I would go up to Fort Belvoir or whatever with forged documents, and we would literally liberate massive quantities of lumber and generators and other equipment from the other branches of the service. I'd go up there with a couple 5-ton trucks and literally have their personnel even load the material for us. And it was the ultimate bluff, and I don't know what would have happened if I ever got caught. But it served me well in Okinawa. I'll get more into that later. So then in January, I went home for Christmas, and then in January I started artillery school at Fort Sill.
Where is that?
In Oklahoma. Lawton, Oklahoma, which is one of the armpits of the universe. It was not a very nice place to live or be, but it was good artillery training, and I learned a lot. And I made a lot of good friends there, but the interesting part for me was that when I was choosing my military occupational specialty, they call it MOS, I knew I didn't want to be infantry because you had to walk and carry these heavy packs on your back, and I said, that's not for me. I'm lazy. So I said, well, I'll pick artillery because I want to be in a combat arm, but I didn't want to walk there, so I said, artillery, I'll have my own driver and jeep. But I didn't realize you're supposed to be good in math. I never thought that far ahead. And so I get to Fort Sill, and there's a lot of math. And fortunately, I had a couple friends who were good in math and who helped me. But it was challenging. And it was a good learning experience for me in that sense because I didn't realize I could rise to that level of math skills. I really am still terrible at math. But I somehow managed to make it through there. I actually graduated fairly well in my class. And then I knew I was, I left something out of the story. In October, before I left Quantico, Virginia, where I was going through after basic school, I was going on a blind date. My roommate wanted to go to the Marine Corps birthday ball.
Mm-hmm. Quantico's in Virginia, is that
Quantico,
correct?
Virginia, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I assume everybody knows that, but they don't. So he wanted to do a blind date, and I, up to this point, I had been dating some rather, how should I put this? Dumb-witted women in D.C., mm-hmm. and not, you know, they were nice and everything, but...
But not so intellectual.
Not too bright. Mm-hmm. And because you're a young Marine officer and you think you're hot stuff, mm-hmm. and I've got my... I had a Pontiac Firebird, mm-hmm. used Pontiac Firebird, and you think you're pretty cool uh-huh. and all that stuff. And then my roommate wants me to do this blind date with him. And he was dating at the time the daughter of the commanding officer of the Marine Corps Base Quantico, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And he says, she's got a, my girlfriend's got a friend that you'd really like to meet and blah, blah, blah. And, but the Marine Corps birthday is rather expensive. Mm-hmm. So we did a pre-date to see whether we wanted to spend the money to go on the Marine Corps birthday ball. So we did the pre-date, mm-hmm. and we actually went out to the Kennedy Center and saw mm-hmm. a play that night and had a great time. And mm-hmm. I knew the moment when I met my wife, the moment I met her, but I knew almost immediately that this was definitely the best woman I had ever met in my life.
And what is your wife's name?
My wife's name is, well, her name was Regina Reed at the time. Mm-hmm. And I met her, and... I was just blown away with her. Mm-hmm. I just thought this was so cool. So we probably met in late October. Mm-hmm. And then in late December, I go home for the holidays, and then I start artillery school in January. Mm-hmm. And as I was leaving Quantico, Virginia to drive to Fort Sill, mm-hmm. I hadn't planned this. I happened to drive by a florist shop, and I stopped the car, and I got out, and I sent her this huge bouquet of or arrangement mm-hmm. of flowers. Mm-hmm. And said, I miss you, or something like this. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what I put
and
in the
car. And
she
from Virginia?
She was living in, working in Woodbridge. She was living in Woodbridge, Virginia, working nearby. She was a teacher.
And that's originally where she's from?
She's from a Navy family, mm-hmm. so she lived a lot of different places. In mm-hmm. fact, her father was at Pearl Harbor when it was bombed mm-hmm. by the Japanese. Mm-hmm. So we talked on the phone when I was home on leave, mm-hmm. and then when I was at Fort Sill, we talked on the phone. I flew back. So we dated from October till December, mm-hmm. and nothing formal when I left. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of bye, and then we talked on the phone a lot, and mm-hmm. then I went back one long weekend in January to visit, and then one long weekend in February, mm-hmm. I believe it was President's Weekend, mm-hmm. went back there and kind of spur of the moment proposed. Mm-hmm. This is to somebody I'd only known for a few months, mm-hmm. literally. And it was kind of, it wasn't kind of, it was rather extremely impulsive, mm-hmm. but I guess I knew in my heart this mm-hmm. is the right thing. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. I proposed, I didn't even make a formal proposal. We were just talking one night, mm-hmm. and I said, because I thought at the time I was going to Vietnam. I was mm-hmm. 99% certain mm-hmm. I was going to Vietnam. And I said, when I get back from Vietnam, what do you think about getting married and blah, 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 and doing this? And I caught her totally off guard. Mm-hmm. She says, well, let me think about this. You surprised me. So the next night we had dinner with her parents, mm-hmm. who were salt of the earth, just it was Betty and Jim Reed, and they mm-hmm. were just wonderful, wonderful people. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have gotten better in-laws. Mm-hmm. Just fantastic. And we had dinner with them. And in the meantime, she's telling her mother, Bob proposed to me last mm-hmm. night, and after we left to go back down to her place, the mother tells the father, calls the sister in Florida, and the gist of the conversation with the mother is, she asked her mother, what should I do? And her mother said, well, do you love him? And she says, yes, and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So her family knew the answer before I did. So by the time we got down to her place in Virginia,
they all knew.
And it was kind of comical, but I had this huge bugaboo about being crippled. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of friends killed or seriously wounded in mm-hmm. Vietnam, and I didn't want to get married before I went over, because I didn't mind dying. Mm-hmm. some weird thing in my head, dying didn't scare me as much as being crippled, because I'd been in the hospital wards and seen the wounded, mm-hmm. missing legs and arms and mm-hmm. body parts. And so I said, if I come back in one piece and I'm healthy, I would like to get married. Mm-hmm. That was the agreement. because I didn't want her to be responsible for some cripple.
Mm.
I mean, just my male ego, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so I finished artillery school in, I guess, April, mm-hmm. something like that. And then I went overseas. And the staging point for Vietnam at that time was Okinawa. That was where the 3rd Marine Division was headquartered at mm-hmm. the time. And so I was sent over there, and I joined a 155 towed howitzer battery. I was a fire direction officer slash communications officer slash supply officer slash blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a young green Marine second mm-hmm. lieutenant. I remember checking in with my new boss, and the procedure was you snap to in front of his desk and you salute and blah, blah, blah. And he said, "You must be the worst officer in the Marine Corps that I've ever seen." And he starts yelling and screaming at me. And I thought I was, what's in my record book that mm-hmm. indicate, you know. And he says, then at the end, he says, "Oh, I'm just toying with you." But I thought he was serious.
Uh-huh.
And he was a wild man.
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Captain Paul Roberts. And it was ironic because later on when he was leaving change of duty stations, even while he was still there, I was going out and stealing stuff. Well, I shouldn't say stealing. I was liberating U.S. military equipment from other branches of the military.
As you learned earlier.
As I learned
yes.
while I was at Quantico. So I would go down. We needed a generator or we mm-hmm. needed paint or whatever we needed.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to some other Army or Navy CB base. I don't know if I went to Kadena or not. I can't remember mm-hmm. Kadena, but which is a big air base on Okinawa. But I remember going on to the CB base one day, and we had one or two five-ton trucks, and the Navy guard didn't salute properly. So I said, "This is good. This is going to work to my advantage." So I got out and chewed him a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we were there, he expedited all of the loading for us. And so they actually did all the loading of all the equipment and all the paint and gear that mm-hmm. we liberated. And it was kind of, we had this big commanding general's inspection right after that. And in the Marine Corps supply system, we were always at the bottom of the food chain. Mm-hmm. We were always last to get anything.
Mm-hmm.
And but all our vehicles had brand new paint. We were the only unit in the entire island, the Marine Corps unit, that had brand new paint. And the commanding general was doing the inspection. He said, "How is it the Kilo battery has the only painted vehicles?" Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a difficult situation mm-hmm. because it was hard to explain how we had the green paint and nobody else did, but it worked out.
So how long were you on Okinawa for?
So I got on Okinawa, and within three or four days later, I'm on a ship to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sent up. We landed at Yokosuka mm-hmm. Beach there. Near Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And there was thousands of anti-war protesters mm-hmm. on the island and waiting for us. And
mm-hmm.
They were lined up against the seawall, and that's how it was. And then we drove from there up to Camp Fuji, Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And we were literally right on the base of the mountain. It was my recollections of Fuji were cold, wet, and windy most mm-hmm. of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember lava coming out of your sinuses continuously. Mm-hmm. I mean, you blew your nose and there was lava coming
mm-hmm.
out. But we were there, I want to say 2 or 3 months. Then we went back to Okinawa.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we were on the beach at not Yokosuka. I said Yokosuka. I meant New Mizzou.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say I meant New Mizzou Beach. And it was a typhoon or something was hitting. I don't know what it was going on, but they couldn't get the ships into Lodos.
Mm.
And we were sleeping underneath the vehicles, and it was torrential downpours. And we were totally filthy. I mean, we were there for 3 or 4 nights. And I had never been so wet. We were just soaking wet all the time and dirty, recovered engine oil. And
mm-hmm.
I remember boarding the ship and early in the morning. And then the captain was real nice, and we were the only Marine unit aboard there. And he let us come into the officer's mess just the way we were. He didn't. Mm. He said, "Don't change." Just we were dry at this point because by the time we got all the vehicles loaded. And I remember sitting down for lunch, and there was four Marine officers with, I don't know, 15, 20 Navy officers, whatever was aboard there, I don't remember. And we were ravenous. Mm-hmm. We were eating like we, you know, you wouldn't believe it. We hadn't had fresh food in weeks. Mm-hmm. We've been living on sea rations. And somebody mentioned to us, how can you guys eat that icky food? And I looked around the table and I said, who might you be? Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm Midshipman Jones from mm-hmm. Annapolis on my training cruise. And I remember telling him, I said, to you, my name is Sir.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to know this is the best food we've had in mm-hmm. months and months, you know, since mm-hmm. we last were on the ship. But anyway, I loved being aboard ship because we could, it was very light duty, and we did some training and stuff, but we had good food, and that's mm-hmm. one of my
best memories.
We also gambled a lot.
Uh-huh. Now, did you ever go to Vietnam?
No, I was lucky mm-hmm. because.
So, how long were you in Japan before you went home?
So, I was Okinawa for a few days, Japan for about 2 or 3 months, mm-hmm. back to Okinawa for 2 or 3, 4 months, whatever it was, mm-hmm. back to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went back and forth one time as pay officer, but mm-hmm. I flew home from Japan.
And when was that?
That was in 1972.
Mm-hmm. And where was Reggie at the time?
She was living still in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So, but one thing I do remember in Japan, mm-hmm. I went, when I was at Camp Fuji, I was a pay officer one time. Uncle Sam would pay us in bills. There was no, mm-hmm. everything, all brand new bills.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going into town to convert the U.S. dollars into yen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember how much money I had with me, but tens of thousands of dollars. And we would go in a convoy of three Jeeps. And you can imagine doing this in Mill Valley. Each Jeep had a 50 caliber machine gun mounted on there.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm.
And loaded with pay guards. And I have a 45 caliber pistol mm-hmm. on my hip and a briefcase full of money. And mm-hmm. we peel up in front of the bank and face outward with mm-hmm. the three Jeeps with all this armor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a vivid memory of being in Japan and everybody kind of staring at you because mm-hmm. it's just a security concern. But anyway, I came back to the States in 1972,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, so, yeah, 70, yeah, no, it was 73,
mm-hmm.
okay, 73, and let me backtrack a little because I always requested Hawaii as my first duty station, mm-hmm. and they always sent me my third duty station, whatever, you know, there were three choices, mm-hmm. and so when I went to Okinawa, I put Hawaii, they sent me to mm-hmm. Okinawa. When I came stateside, I put down Hawaii, and they sent, my third choice was 29 Palms,
mm-hmm.
which is about an hour north of Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they sent me to 29 Palms, which turned out to be great. I had had a lot of nuclear training when I was in Okinawa. I was one of the very, very, almost non-existent Marine officers that had nuclear training. Mm-hmm. I was just starting up then. And I was assigned a mic battery.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was walking down the hall to take my report in, I met another young lieutenant. And he said, where are you headed? I said, I'm going to mic battery. He says, you're screwed.
Mm.
He says, that's the worst boss you possibly can get. He's literally fired the last three or four XOs before you in the last 4 months. He said, nobody lasts more than a month.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big... I can't use the expletives, mm-hmm. but...
mm-hmm. But imagine, we can imagine.
Yeah, he used a lot of expletives in describing mm-hmm. this guy, and I met him and instantly disliked him.
Batteries, okay. Yep.
And we had a lot of run-ins, and the scary part is we were the nuclear contingency battery, the first to go in the world with low-grade nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And this unit was in really bad shape. It was one of the worst Marine units I'd ever seen. And... we butted heads for first 2 or 3, 4 weeks, and we had a blowout argument one night.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, just get off my back and let me do my job. We'll make some changes here.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to use some rather innovative techniques, but we got the job done. So I got back stateside in April, and got down there. So this is April 73. And basically I got rid of most of the non-commissioned officers.
Mm.
He had somehow ended up with some of the worst ones I'd ever seen. And anyway, we did a lot of training out there in the desert, a lot of time. And in October of 73, the Arab-Israeli war broke out. And we got orders to invade one of the Arab countries with nuclear weapons. And all I had time to do was run home and leave. We were living on base. Mm-hmm. And I left a note from my wife, Reggie.
So were you married at the time, then?
Yeah, we're married. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. I forgot to mention when I got back. Well, no, right after I got back. In June of 73, we got married, June 23rd, 1973.
Mm-hmm. And where did you get married?
In Navy Chapel in Washington, D.C.
Oh, very nice.
And our honeymoon was not very glamorous because we drove her car loaded to the brim with all of her stuff from Virginia to California mm-hmm. in the heat of the summer. Mm-hmm. And the highlight was two nights in Dodge City. We actually had air conditioning and a pool. I mean, that was the highlight of it. Everything else was one night. Mm-hmm. One night in St. Louis, one night, you know, mm-hmm. Las Vegas or whatever. But at any rate, and then October 73, we had the orders to with the nuclear weapons. And I just had time to run home, leave a note for my wife, Reggie, mm-hmm. who was in town teaching. Mm-hmm. I said, we're going. I can't tell you where we're going and what we're doing, but I'm going to be gone. Love you. Mm-hmm. So we sat there for, I don't know how many, 2 or 3 days, but we thought the planes were in there waiting for us. And I remember having a meeting of all the enlisted. Mm-hmm. I gathered everybody in this giant auditorium that we had. I think I had about 160 young Marines working for me. Mm-hmm. And I said, I had my first sergeant standing next to me. He's fought in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. He had ribbons all the way down his mm-hmm. chest. And he remarked, we go into this meeting, and I basically told all the Marines, I said, if you have a problem, let me backtrack, because this is the first time we had unlimited resources. Mm-hmm. If we didn't need new equipment, new personnel, whatever we needed, we got it. Never a question asked. That was my one and only time experience. We had good, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had the meeting, and I said, anybody who doesn't want to go, you got girl problems, drug problems, family problems, whatever, fear problems, whatever your thing is, I'll arrange a transfer. And the first sergeant looks at me like, you are the dumbest officer I've ever seen in my entire life. Mm-hmm. And I go back to my office, and I literally was sweating bullets. Mm-hmm. And not one Marine came forward. Mm. It actually was a morale builder, which was my intention. But the good news is the Israelis were able to turn the tide of war, mm-hmm. and we didn't have to do it. So that was I won't say a happy experience, but it was a good experience in that it didn't happen. Then. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to go. Because I was the commander, I get to give the fire to fire the nukes. Mm-hmm. And that's, in hindsight, it's a horrible responsibility to have that. I mean, because you're killing 10 or 20 or 50,000 people. Mm-hmm. So anyway, finished up my Marine career in May of 74. Great experience for me. And then I did a trial period at Mill Valley Market. They had invited me to come back for a trial period to see if they wanted me and see if I wanted to come mm-hmm. into the business. So I did that from mid-May till end of December.
And where were you living when you came
back?
Well,
when I came back, we bought a little house in Greenbrae. Mm-hmm. And that was our
first. What was Greenbrae like at the time?
Pretty much like it is now. It hasn't changed a whole mm-hmm. lot because I've driven by the house. The house is a little better now, mm-hmm. but I mean, it was a nice starter home. Mm-hmm. That's what we could afford, mm-hmm. I got a Calvet loan, which mm-hmm. was great. So we did the trial period, and it worked out. And then I became a partner on January 1st, I believe, 1975.
And was your father still living then?
My father was still living, but he was out of the business by that point.
So who was responsible for the business at that
point? So at that time, there was my brother, Jim, and another gentleman, Joe Morello. They were mm-hmm. partners. And they invited me to become a third partner. Mm-hmm. And I did.
Mm-hmm. And how did you collaborate? Did you divide up who was responsible
everybody,
for which part? And so what was your part?
My part kind of grew, mm-hmm. and I started out buying and doing, what was it, frozen foods and dairy and stuff like that. But the problem was the business was antiquated. Mm-hmm. So my role evolved more into modernizing the business in terms of computerizing everything.
So you brought in the technology then?
The technology, mm-hmm. and I'm not a tech geek, but mm-hmm. I mean, they had an old typewriter that was, could have been in the Smithsonian Museum, mm-hmm. but it was that old, and they didn't even have a copy machine. I mean, it was just, you know, but they were doing okay, but it was, they needed some changes, and so we made a lot of changes. And
so when you came in, what was the market like, the configuration? Had you taken over, you had all of the space?
We had the seven aisles that we, mm-hmm. but we did not have the wine and liquor department mm-hmm. and deli department mm-hmm. at that time. So that came in the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. We expanded over in that final corner. So I guess my role was a lot of the marketing, modernization, a lot of the hiring. I got rid of a lot of people. There was a lot of dead wood that shouldn't have been there.
Mm-hmm.
And I one thing I hated doing is firing anybody. So that's the last thing I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through the, you know, disciplinary steps. And a lot of times people corrected their, you know, people were taking long lunch breaks and flaking out and stuff like this. We cleaned up the...
So do you think your Marine Corps training helped prepare you for being the boss?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's no mm-hmm. doubt in my mind because we... There's more accountability and less sliding.
Mm-hmm.
And even the pricing system was not... I mean, I noticed, I think the 6 months after I got there, that we'd been misbilled on our dairy purchases from the old Form West Dairy. And I paid for my salary. I went through as far back as I could go back on these invoices, and I paid my salary for all the overpricing they had done for us for the first mm-hmm. year. That's how much they'd overbilled them. So it was more keeping an eye on things and making some changes and stuff like that. And it was a challenge. It was fun. And mm-hmm.
And how was it working with your brother?
Well, he was kind of on the quiet side. Mm-hmm. We always got along fine, the three of us. And, mm-hmm. and the only bad part was the long hours. We had horrible mm-hmm. hours. You'd work normally work week was 6 days. Well, five, some of the weeks you'd have a 5 day, 5 day, and then you'd have a 6 day, 5 day, 5 day, 6 day.
Mm-hmm.
And but you're working 11 to 12 hours a day. So, you know, people complain about 45, 50 hour a week. That was nothing. And
mm-hmm.
when we expanded into the wine and deli department, my other partner, Joe Morella, literally, I think the first or second week of the remodel, he had a heart attack.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So my brother and I, Jim and I, were working 13 days on, one day off.
Mm.
We'd alternate every other Sunday, and we would start work at 6:30 in the morning, go till midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. And we mm-hmm. did this for months and months and months.
Mm-hmm.
And on the 14th day, I would just sleep. I'd get up.
And where was Reggie involved in the business at all?
No, she was not. But the kids, we had kids at this point.
Oh,
we
tell me about your kids.
I totally got off track.
Forgot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Tell me about your children.
So Matt was born in June. Oh, golly. I'm getting the birthday. He's born July 23rd,
mm-hmm.
1976.
Mm-hmm.
And this one we're in Green Bay. And Brian was born June 29th. 1978. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Mill Valley from Green Bay in May of 79.
And did you move into the house that you
we're in right now? So we live mm-hmm. on 6 Middle Court in Mill mm-hmm. Valley now. And the house actually came on the market. We'd been looking with a realtor for several months. We couldn't find anything remotely that we liked. And then one day he says, I've got this house for you. This is the house.
Mm-hmm.
It was on a Monday. And I said, well, let's go look at it tomorrow, Tuesday. And he says, pick me up at the Mill Valley Market the next morning, I think at 9 o'clock or something. 8:30 the next morning, he calls me. He says, Bob, the house sold already.
Mm.
And then a month later, he calls me and says, the financing fell through. Would you like to see it? I said, pick me up in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So we went and saw it and called my wife, and she came down to look at it. And we put a bid on it that same night.
Mm-hmm.
This was the house, and we loved that house. But anyway, going back to my two sons, I digress a lot.
That's fine. This is exactly the conversation that we wanted to have.
I have two wonderful sons that are the apple of my eye.
Mm-hmm.
And
where do they live now?
So my oldest son, Matt, lives on Miller, right off on Evergreen, right off of Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in banking for a while, and then mortgages.
And where did he go to elementary school, middle school?
He went to Park,
mm-hmm.
Mill Valley Middle School, Tam High.
Mm-hmm.
Pepperdine, got a mm-hmm. degree in business from Pepperdine. He did his junior year, half a year in Florence and a half a year in London.
Oh.
And so he graduated in 1998, and Brian went to Park, Mill Valley Middle School, Tam High, and then he went to Bates College in in Maine.
Far away.
Far away. And he graduated in the year 2000, and he did his junior year in Strasbourg, France. And he was actually in a French university. And both of them are probably listening to all my travel stories. They did a lot of traveling while they're abroad. Actually, Matt did a sophomore year. I take that back. He did a sophomore year in Europe. That's how the Pepperdine did it. But anyway, and Brian graduated in 2000, and then he went to live in... So Matt was living in Southern California, working down there in banking. And Brian lived in Washington, D.C. area when he graduated. And he went on, while he was working, he got a master's degree in political management from George Washington University. And then he got a another master's degree from Virginia Tech in urban planning with a specialty in transportation. So anyway, Matt lives in Mill Valley now. And his wife was making more than he did. And when the baby, our granddaughter Sophie, was born 7+ years ago, he became Mr. Mom. They wanted to have a stay-at-home parent. And Ryan moved out from California, moved from Virginia to California in 2006. And he got a great job in San Francisco. He works in transportation planning for a firm called Nelson Nygaard in San Francisco.
So is he living in San Francisco still?
He's living in San Francisco. So Matt's wife is named Joella, and we love her dearly. And so Matt has two children, Sophia, who's 7, and Sean, who will be 3 in January. And Brian just got married in June of this year, and to a wonderful young lady named Livier, and they're now expecting a child in March.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, so, and so we're blessed with two great sons, two great daughters-in-law, and two great grandkids, and a third on the way. And one thing I do want to say, I've been extremely lucky and blessed throughout my life. A lot of luck you make your own, but I've also been in some hairy situations where I've been very lucky that I managed to get out of trouble when I could have been in a lot worse shape than I was. But you know, to have the family that I have, I'm really, really blessed. They're the apple and joy of my life. So,
now, did either of your boys think about working at the market, or did they as young boys also, like you did?
I never put I put zero pressure on them. I said, do whatever you want to do. That was always the only pressure I ever put. I said, just follow your gut and do what you want. And they hadn't. They worked in the store periodically, bagging groceries and doing stocking and inventory and stuff like that. But they had no inclination for the business. And that was fine with me. I didn't really care. I mean, if they did, that would be great. If they didn't, that was great, too. It was, I had no pushing whatsoever in either direction. And Brian, in fact, I think is going to, he's chief growth officer for his firm now, and they're talking about making him COO in January. So we'll see how that goes. But it's been interesting. And Matt is a far better father than I ever was. I mean, he's just phenomenal with both our grandkids. And I admire his parenting skills because he literally was a lot more patient, a lot better father than I literally ever could be or would be. And he's an amazing dad. But anyway, I'm very proud of my entire family. So.
And what about, let's go back to Mill Valley Market just a little bit. So how long were you there? When did you retire?
So that's a good question because in, I think it was November 3rd, 2004, Matt and his then girlfriend, now daughter-in-law Joella, Joe we call her, we'd gone out for Chinese food that night. And I came home and got very sick. I was throwing up and diarrhea and everything. But I'd never had vomiting like this. This was, I learned what the term hurling meant that night. And And my wife wanted to call, Reggie wanted to call 911, and I said, no, it's, but then I was losing consciousness, and I still wouldn't let her call. And then when I got pain down my arm, I finally let her call. And next thing I look up, and our bedroom's filled with police, fire, and paramedics. And one thing I have mentioned thus far, but I used to do these awards at the Redwoods for 20 years. And one of the awards was Public Safety Officer Award. And it was kind of cool to look up and see a bunch of the people that have received that awards at the
recognized.
Redwoods. But there was 8 or 9 police, fire, and paramedics in our bedroom. And the interesting part was that they gave me some medicine or something. I forget what they did, but nothing was working. So they zoomed me out of the house into the ambulance. And Reggie was in her pajamas. This is like 10 o'clock at night. And we head over the hill, because we live in Scott Valley area, and we head over the hill from Mill Valley into Corte Madera. And I heard the paramedic speaking to the hospital, and he said, you better have the heart team there, because I don't think he's going to make it to the hospital. He's going to need treatment immediately. His vital signs are so bad, he's probably going to die before he gets there. I had my eyes closed. He didn't realize I could hear him. He thought I was unconscious. And I heard every word he said. And I'm getting misty here. I started crying because I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to my wife. Because I didn't realize how serious it was. At any rate, the next thing I know, we're driving around, and the paramedic is screaming at the ambulance driver, where the F are you? He'd gotten lost.
Oh, my gosh.
In the meantime, Reggie was in her pajamas, had to put her contact lenses in, and she drives to the hospital. And so we had a big head start, because she had to get, lock up the house and everything. She gets to the hospital, and there's no husband. And we finally pull in, and I have to say, Marine General really took care of me. They, I had a stent put in that night, and then another one a couple days later. And when I was finally released, the nurse who released me was a nice lady, nurse from Africa, actually. I think it was Nigeria, Kenya, she told me. And I said, you really smile. She had this beautiful smile. And I said, you look really happy. And she says, oh, yeah, I normally work in the emergency room. I was in the night you came in, and we all thought you were a goner. And you were one of, because you were really bad shape, and we thought you weren't going to make it. So this was a really, I like to say, this is the second best thing that ever happened to me, other than my wife and kids and grandkids, because it made me prioritize my life in terms of what was really important. And but I didn't want to make a rush judgment. Reggie, we talked about it in terms of retiring. She says, give it some thought. Don't make a spur of the moment decision. And so I did. In the meantime, I went through a cardiac rehab program in Green Bay for 8 weeks. It was about 100 hours of this rehab program, and made a lot of lifestyle changes, diet, stress, exercise.
And when you left the market, when you retired, who was still in charge, or who were the
people
in charge?
20 months after the heart attack, then I formally retired.
And 20 months later.
20 months later.
Almost 2 years.
Yeah, but I also wanted to coincide with the end of our fiscal year. So it would have either been 8 months or 20 months. And 8 months, I wasn't quite sure at that point. And so I just timed it, and I want to make a smooth transition. I didn't want to leave a rough transition and leave problems behind. So I talked to my two nephews, and we had a buy sell.
What are your nephews' names?
Oh, my two nephews, Doug and David Canepa, Jim's sons.
And Jim was living at the time, or
Jim was still living. Yes.
Had he retired by this time?
No, he was no longer a partner. So 1990, Jim and Joe entirely retired from the market. Joe Morello, and Jim quasi retired in the sense that he didn't have ownership anymore, but he still worked there. He kind of set his own hours, and whatever he wanted to do was fine. If he wanted to go to Italy and go hiking, that was fine. So whatever he wanted to do was fine. But he was hard. I mean, he worked harder and retired than any of the employees ever did. But anyway, so Doug and David bought me out in, so my last day was June 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into retirement, and that's my probably the third chapter of my life, because I love retirement.
Mm-hmm. Well, before you talk about your retirement,
sure.
I need you to go back and talk about, so you've talked about what you did as your paid job, but you have done so much for Mill Valley with unpaid volunteer time. So I want you to talk about the things that you did when you said from a very young age you knew you had to give back to your community. And I think you're so well known in this community for all that you've given to our town, not just as a business person and a retired business person, but your volunteer commitment to so many things in this town are probably what people know you for. So can you talk a little bit about what you did and why you did these things?
Well, things just kind of evolved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're in a building,
mm-hmm.
Such as Mill Valley Market, for so many hours per day, that gets a little bit old after a while. I mean, basically, you're doing a lot of the same stuff mm-hmm. over and over and over. And somehow or other, I became the face of the store. My brother was also very involved in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so were my two nephews, Doug and David.
Yes, very.
I mean, the whole family's been involved. So at some point, my mother was a resident at the Redwoods. My father died in 1978, just mm-hmm. a few months before Brian was born.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was a resident of the Redwoods. I don't know. She moved there in the 80s, I believe. Maybe before this. I'm trying to think. She probably moved there late 70s, early.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I got involved at the Redwoods. I was I started out as a blackjack dealer
mm-hmm.
for their
annual fundraiser. Mm-hmm.
And then I started doing, I was on their board of directors, and I was doing the senior. Then we discussed this thing called the senior prom. And
what was the senior prom?
The senior prom initially, it was supposed to be a dance for the residents. And I'm a new board member, and I said, why don't we, kind of a crazy idea, I said, why don't we see if we can get some kids from the high school to come over? And the other board members looked at me like he is dumber than dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Why would the high schools students want to come over here? And I said, well, let me pull in a few kids. And I had done some stuff at the high school already at this point. And so I pulled in some favors and got four or five students the first year to come over and help decorate and schmooze and dance with the seniors. And they had such a good time that thereafter we had to cut the numbers.
They, the residents, or they, the students?
Both.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had such a good time.
Mm-hmm.
The residents loved the students. I didn't realize it was my hope that this would turn into be something good, but it turned into something great.
Mm-hmm.
The residents loved the students. The students would come over and decorate. We'd put together these goodie bags. I'd get all the vendors to give me merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
And so there'd be goodie bags for the residents, the students, and the other volunteers, and the MCs and the band. And but they would. The best part was the students communicating and interacting with the residents.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I remember one evening, there was a lady. They were out. We also had a professional band,
mm-hmm.
and we had a dance instructor. Right, and I remember one evening they were doing the Charleston, and there was an 86-year-old woman dancing with a 17-year-old high boy from Tam High, and she was doing the Charleston. It was hilarious. I mean, she was having the time of her life,
mm-hmm.
and I found out 3 months later she died of cancer.
Oh.
But she had a great time,
mm-hmm.
and we were joking the first year we could have called this the mothball prom, because a lot of these gowns had never been in mothballs. They'd been in a mothball many years.
Mm-hmm.
And the women really loved, especially the women, mm-hmm. they loved the opportunity to get out there and dance
mm-hmm.
and dress up. And the problem is the Redwoods is there's 80% women,
mm-hmm.
or maybe even higher. So we didn't have enough male dance partners. So we had some students. And then I would beg, borrow, and steal anybody who owed me a favor, city council, school board, any male person that could walk or talk, and mm-hmm. you didn't need to dance necessarily. Mm-hmm. If you could schmooze, that qualified. Mm-hmm. So I would persuade people to come down and dance. Mm-hmm. And it was a great opportunity. And then we also did the Celebration of Service Awards down there, which for teachers and students mm-hmm. and public safety officers and other awards. And I love doing that because I got to meet some really incredible teachers and students that way. Mm-hmm. I've been inspired by some of these students especially. Mm-hmm. I also did, I've been a Rotarian for almost 31 years now. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed that a lot. I was president in the early 90s.
This is for the Mill Valley Rotary Club.
Mill Valley mm-hmm. Rotary Club, and we were actually at the district conference we have every year. We were the number one club in the district because I'm very active. So we had a very active year, and it was a very good year and very good experience. I was glad when the year was up because it was a lot of work. Mm-hmm. But I still do a lot of stuff at Rotary.
And what is the philosophy of the Rotary? What is the organization, in case people who listen or read about it, what does it do?
The Rotary motto is service above self. Mm-hmm. And that's what Rotary is all about. And I remember going on as part of a medical team to Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to be ostensibly there to take photos and stuff, but I ended up doing photos and working with the eye team. Mm-hmm. And I went down with an optometrist, I guess, mm-hmm. and he had 6,000 or 7,000 pairs of eyeglasses with him. Mm-hmm. So they taught me how to do the eyeglasses mm-hmm. and how to do all the readings and stuff. And I remember they brought in this woman who was technically blind. She couldn't walk by herself. She was let in by her granddaughter. So the woman was probably in her mid-80s. Granddaughter was probably 15, 18, I don't know. And maybe it's even great-granddaughter, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I remember putting the glasses on the woman, and we had a mirror in front of her, mm-hmm. and she started crying like mm-hmm. a baby, mm-hmm. literally. And she reached over, and I said something in Spanish, "You're muy bonita, very mm-hmm. beautiful mm-hmm. with your new glasses." And she gave me the biggest kiss. And it was probably one of the best experiences of my life mm-hmm. because we were there for, I don't know, a week or 10 days, whatever it was, but there was thousands of people every morning lined up. There was dentists, doctors, mm-hmm. gynecologists, mm-hmm. And just being part of that experience and being able to make a difference. Mm-hmm. It was a really unique experience. And I don't remember what year it was, but actually, yeah, there's an award in Rotary called the Service Above Self Award. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. It's the highest honor you can mm-hmm. get in Rotary, and I actually got it back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And, it was really a nice surprise to get that. But anyway, I enjoy Rotary. I still do that.
And what is your role right now in Rotary?
I'm in charge of our endowment fund. Mm-hmm. I've been president of that since we started it. 8 or 9 years ago, mm-hmm. and we fund different things such as Kiddo mm-hmm. and other a lot of other groups. Mm-hmm. I also do most of our programs, and I also do various miscellaneous things. I try and make things a little bit more fun, so I just kind of mm-hmm. I get my fingers in different pies.
Well, tell me about your involvement in the Mill Valley School District, because you're also even involved with the Mill Valley Schools and Kiddo for a long time too.
So both my sons were in school in Mill Valley, and I was asked to join the Kiddo, Mill Valley Schools Community Foundation mm-hmm. before it became Kiddo, and I was asked to join the board.
Trisha Garlock and Penny Weiss.
And Penny Weiss, mm-hmm. yes. And they had a retreat at the Rawlson Retreat House, mm-hmm. and the lady who was supposed to be in charge of this business committee, which was fairly new at the time, it was really... Well, it was new. It wasn't mm-hmm. really, the business committee never really operated before then. Mm-hmm. It had a name, but it never really did anything. Mm-hmm. And I remember being at the retreat, and the lady who was supposed to be in charge of the business committee flaked out. And I remember, so we were going through the retreat and asking everybody's goals for the year. And it was either Penny or Trish said to me, so Bob, what are the goals of the business committee? I mean, totally blindsided me. Mm-hmm. I had no idea I was going to be asked anything. Mm-hmm. It was my first meeting of any of meeting these people, in fact, right? And I was kind of by surprise, and I said, $20,000, and everybody in the room started almost laughing because they had no money.
And this was in 1987, right?
I don't. You tell me. Okay. I'm glad you're here because I don't remember what year it was.
Yes, 1987.
Okay. And so we went home and was trying to figure out how to accomplish that because there was nothing. We started from nothing. And I talked to my wife and I was going nowhere. And then one night, about a week later, I literally in the middle of the night woke up, got a yellow legal pad and went in the kitchen and just started writing. And the whole premise was based on reciprocal relationship. My philosophy has always been win-win. There's not a loser if everybody walks away from the table happy. And I tried to do that in the Marine Corps Mill Valley Market. Everybody walks away happy and a winner. And so the whole premise of the program was devised around that concept. And the first year was really tough. I can't even tell you how many hours walking the streets of Mill Valley. And I knew from the get-go, especially the first year, phone calls weren't going to do it. So it was, I think, almost all our, we called them adoptions in those days instead of school supporters, but they were almost all done via cold calling or making an appointment in advance, but face-to-face contact. And we...
What was the relationship between the businesses and the schools at that time?
Not good. It was... Well, actually, that's an understatement. The relationship was horrible.
And why do you think that was?
Because the parents would... the schools would collect the money and then go shop elsewhere. And it was not a win-win situation. And so I had to persuade the business community by supporting the schools. The schools will and the parent community will support you. That was a tough sell. Because we've gone 180 the other way today. And so the first year was extremely, I can't even begin to tell you how difficult the first year was. But we got the almost $20,000. Penny and Trish were, I think, astounded because they didn't believe we could do it. We were close enough, but I think we were 19,500, something like that. And the second year, I think we were 30,000, and the third year, we were 50,000. And so it was a good experience, and I've always enjoyed working with kids, and I can be fairly persuasive when working with people, so it worked out, and I've done other things kind of on the sidelines with the school since. I mean, I was I was an instructor at TAM for many years. On job interviewing and college interviewing, I do these classes like that. We do these mock interviews, and but I really enjoy working with kids. And it's one of my highest priorities is the children. So I was involved. I'm still a little bit involved with Kiddo, helping a little bit with the business committee and the endowment, even the strategic plan committee.
So when you're not volunteering these days, you are traveling a lot. And in one of the interviews that I read of you, you said you had a goal of a certain number of countries you had wanted to visit. And what was that goal, and have you reached that goal?
Well, the goal is a minimum of 80, excuse me, goal of 100, because there's a club called the Century Travelers Club or something. There's actually a website.
So you have to get passport stamps, or how does that work?
No, it's just all... word of honor.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's, you know, you don't have to prove this. I've got lots of old passports, but so I'm at 86.
And which countries are most memorable to you?
The highlight was the Ecuador Galapagos Islands, closely followed by New Zealand. And the most bizarre trip was North Korea. And I almost, this is where I talk about being lucky, because I was within a hair's breadth getting arrested one day.
And what year was that you were in North Korea?
So that was about 4 years ago, right now. And the one day we were out there in the countryside picnicking, and I was with a group of about 14 or 15 tourists. We had one young female guide and then two spy guides. and the spy guides would do periodic body counts, and that we were sternly warned not to do certain things. And I kind of pushed the envelope. And so one day, the day of the picnic, I snuck off and went up the hill. I saw some North Koreans picnicking, and I just wanted to do a quick photo with them. And they invited me to join them to have some rice wine and some food, kimchi, which, and so my what I thought was going to be a minute or two turned into several minutes, and I got my photo op with them, but the two spy guides caught me, and they went ballistic. They were screaming at the North Koreans, they were screaming at me, and then they were screaming at each other. And I think the only thing that kept me from being arrested is that they would have been in more trouble than I was.
For having
letting me slip off. Yeah, exactly. And because I've been following, I follow the North Korea news closely, and I've noticed a lot of, I've seen a lot of Americans being arrested since then. And I think literally that's the only thing that saved me, that they would have been in bigger trouble. That's why I say I'm lucky, because I've had so many things in my life. I could have been shot in Algeria. I could have been, you know, whatever, that God intervened. My wife, Reggie, likes to joke that my guardian angels are exhausted.
And does Reggie travel with you to all of these places?
Some of the places. Some places she doesn't want to go.
Did she go with you on the North Korea
trip? No, no way. There's no absolutely zero way. But anyway, I enjoy traveling, and I'm heading off to Cuba in January, and then hopefully in the fall, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, the other,
all the stands.
There's five stands, so I'm hoping to do the five stands next fall. But so my goal is at least 100.
At least 100. That's fantastic. Now, a hard question for you is, in a few words, how would you describe Mill Valley now, watching your grandchildren grow up here, versus the Mill Valley you grew up in?
Oh, God. Huge difference. When I was a kid, the kids in my class were middle-class families. I mean, there was teachers, sons of or daughters of teachers and plumbers and electricians and tradespeople, and it was not this affluent community that it is today. It was, I mean, it was a very, I won't, you almost call it bucolic time. I walked to school, Mount Carmel, and go to the Sequoia Theater, and for, I don't know, 50 cents or 60 cents, I'd have a movie ticket, popcorn, and spearmint leaves. That was my, I still remember my favorite candy from those days. But it, and there was, it used to be where, oh, Phyllis's Burgers, there used to be a Lady Baltimore bakery there.
Oh, Pearl's Fat Burger.
Pearl's, that's what it is, right, okay. But there used to be a Lady Baltimore bakery there, and I used to go on Sundays to get my donuts, you know. And it was a much more, I won't say blue collar, but it was blue, white collar, but very, very middle class. It wasn't the uber wealthy that we have today. Not, nothing bad about the new residents at all, because I love the new people moving in as well. But the affluency is way different. And I mean, it's just a different world. And the homes were a lot smaller. And, and it was a simpler time. I mean, if you had one car, that was a lot. And not two or three cars per family, or, you know, whatever. But it was a good time. I would go down to the, I got in trouble. I went down, I used to go down to the golf course and go in the creeks and then snag golf balls and sell them to the golfers. I was an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still kids that do that.
No, but I mean, it was, I'd go in the park and get the soda bottles and redeem the bottles, but it was a very simple time. And but again, because when I was 4, 8, and 12, I went to Europe.
Those summers.
Those summers. Well, actually, when I was 8, I was there for 6 or 7 months, because I actually did half a year of school in Italy at that time. But it was a simpler time. But I love where Mill Valley is. It's a beautiful town. It's, I mean, in the old days, downtown Mill Valley, there was a two pharmacies, there was a hardware store, there was a, you know, all these self, you know, resident serving stores. Now Mill Valley's become more like Sausalito, with the ultra fancy women's shoes and dresses and clothes and all this stuff. And I really don't, other than Mill Valley Market and the and Wells Fargo Bank and the card shop, there's not a, or some of the restaurants, but I don't, these other shops, I really don't have much use for.
Now you hike a lot too these days with your dog.
Molly?
Tell me about your favorite trails. Where do you like to go?
So we live in Scott Valley, so we usually do Northridge, and because I can let Molly off leash, and I was up there this morning, did almost a 4 mile hike, and there's a loop that I add on, and so I do 5 days of hiking and then 2 days of gym. So that's my routine. So I do probably 8 or 9, 10 hours of exercise a week. Then we have elliptical machine at home. Then so I'll do my hike, then I'll do 20 minutes of elliptical. Or I'll go to the gym and do a little, you know, it's, but it's this, it's part of my lifestyle changes after the heart attack. So I've exercised more since the heart attack than the time between then and my Marine Corps years. My Marine Corps years, I was pretty lean and mean. And then I packed on the pounds. That was one of the pitfalls of the job is all the food.
The gourmet food all around.
Well, people would.
You have to taste everything to make sure it was good to sell to your customers.
When I'd go to a lot of food shows people think, oh, that's such a glamorous job that you have. You get to go to here and you go there for glamorous, you know, and you eat and you eat and you eat. But it's hard on the waistline. And in front of my desk, there used to be a pile of boxes just loaded with samples all the time, cakes and cookies and beer and chips and, you know, all this stuff. So I'm, that part I don't, I miss it in a sense because it was fun eating all this stuff and trying this stuff, especially the beer. I'm glad I'm not tempted anymore, let's put it that way.
Now, you brought a few things in this packet. Is there anything that you wanted to tell me about, or are they just things
I just thought
we can add to the file here?
Just so you'd have it in the file. Just some stuff about Mill Valley Market, and there was also an interesting thing about my mother and my sister and brother. They got stuck in Nazi Germany when the war broke out in 1939.
Wow.
And there's an, some there's,
articles
there's
about
a number
that,
of articles in there that I copied here from the history room, and they had a really tough time getting out. The war broke out on September 1st, 1939. They were just about ready to leave Germany, and all the shipping closed down, everything closed, and they had a very perilous return journey. So they were fortunate to make it back, but it was one of those being at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, but then they were lucky, like you.
They were very lucky, exactly.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Well, just that I love and still love being part of the Mill Valley community, and I still get involved with different things. It's I know. One thing I forgot to mention is when I retired, I became a volunteer at the volunteer consultant for the MIRN Center for MIRN Center for Volunteer Nonprofit Leadership, CVNL. I forget the actual title of it. Center for Volunteer Nonprofit Leadership. That's
Center for, yeah, you,
that's
I know
it. It's
you
a
wrote
long
it
time.
Down in your notes. Somewhere.
Yeah. But,
yep. Center for Volunteer Nonprofit Leadership.
Okay.
Exactly.
So I did that for the first 7 years after I retired, and I really enjoyed that. I never thought of myself as a consultant, and I work with over 30 different nonprofits. I did more nonprofits than anybody else in that 7 years. That most of people did one or two a year or three, and somehow I ended up with the really tough, the challenging ones, and it was fun. It was really good experience for me, and so I meet with the executive directors and the fund development directors, whoever, and I work with school groups, prison groups, arts groups, veterans groups. It was just amazing. Met some really incredible people. So that was a fun component, and I enjoy that part, and I enjoy being retired.
Well, you say you're retired, but I feel like in all of your volunteer service, you're working a lot too, but in a different way.
Well, I'm gonna be Santa at the Redwoods here in December. So I've got my two Santa gigs at the Redwoods, and I do the visiting the different rooms and residents, and then I do the party. But I love working with people and helping in small ways, and it makes life exciting and fun, and I get to meet such wonderful people. I've been blessed because of all the great people I've met through volunteering and through my job and my mm-hmm. customers. People ask me what I miss most about working is the customers, mm-hmm. and most of the staff and some of my vendors and salespeople and stuff. But the day-to-day stuff I don't miss, but mm-hmm. the customers, because I became very good friends with a lot of customers, mm-hmm. and I still get to see them. That's the good part. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't get to see them as often as I did when I was working. Mm-hmm. But I just love living where I live and having worked where I live. Where I lived, and I'm a very blessed, lucky person.
Well, Bob, thank you for your time.
Sure.
The Historical Society and the History Room appreciate all of these stories and the impact you've had on Mill Valley, because you were asked to join this oral history project because you are a well-known person in our town, and because of all of the wonderful things you've done as a business person, as a volunteer, and just as a member of our community. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Marie.